Chapter 38. That night at dinner, there was something funky going on between his mom and his dad. Bo and Jackie were goofing around like usual, grabbing each other's food and popping up and down for no reason, and playing a version of tag right in the middle of dinner. They had all this energy they needed to burn. Pike remembered those days, but was glad he'd slowed down and was acting more like a man now, at least some of the time. But the thing here was, his parents were ignoring his brother and sister's shenanigans, which was not their typical MO. They seemed detached tonight, not upset exactly, more like doped up, reacting slow, kind of going through the motions. For an instant, Pike was sure they'd found out his secret and were dealing with it in a disbelieving fashion. But common sense said that wasn't realistic. No, that wasn't it. Much as he hated to even think about it, he wondered if their marriage was okay. Maybe there were other signs lately. He'd been so dang wrapped up in himself that he wouldn't have noticed if there were. There was that one thing his dad said that didn't mean anything at the time, at least on the surface. But could there have been something more to it? When his parents were going to the barbecue and his dad seemed to be preaching to him just a bit, to enjoy yourself now because there's not much to do in this town. Pike finished up pretty quick and went upstairs to his room. He needed one more thing on his menu, as Mitch called it, like he needed a hole in the head. Hopefully his mind was running away from him and was imagining the whole scenario downstairs. Mitch called around 9:15. Pike hoped he wouldn't be long-winded because he didn't want to screw up getting to Danny at 9:30. "I've been working this business all day," Mitch said. "We got somewhere." "You didn't go surfing this morning even?" Pike said. "We got a comedian," Mitch said. "Okay, all day after I got out of the ocean. That work?" Pike said it did, wanting to hear something earth-shattering from Mitch, but at the same time not sure he needed to know anymore. "Took quite an effort to narrow it down," Mitch said. "So many variables." Pike was looking at the time. "If he could please bypass the details and give me the bottom line," he said. "It was fascinating, actually," Mitch said. "I started to feel like a detective. It didn't hurt that I used some of the strong-arm tactics that you employed on Wayne." "What are you talking about?" Pike said. "Nothing physical, of course. All transacted on the phone and online. Bottom line, we kept it simple. Compared your filling with the Texas one." "Come on, please," Pike said. "Two different manufacturers, it turns out. And kind of funny, the Texas supply company is actually in New Mexico, Las Cruces." "Oh my God, you're going to turn this into a two-hour lecture," Pike said. "Fine. So your Albuquerque dentist got their amalgam from a company in Louisiana. Now you remember what the composition is." "I'm going to have to go," Pike said. "Okay, hold on," Mitch said. "Just bear with me here. We got mercury, copper, silver, and tin. Like I said, a full day's work, not taking no for an answer, waiting on hold for the key people." Pike again asked if he could please speed it up. "So finally, the Louisiana outfit, they faxed me a bunch of paperwork, and it's all there in the fine print. The New Mexico company was a lot rougher. I had to pull out my hole card, which was threatened to expose them for hiding something if they didn't break it down for me. Bottom line, only the silver came from the same source." "Oh," Pike said. "Yep," Mitch said. "The mercury was Japan and China. The copper, one was Peru, the other Montana. And the tin, one was from Tasmania, which is an island off Australia. And the other mine, not sure which is which, but it doesn't matter. It's in Canada. So the silver, you say, Pike said, trying to keep Mitch focused. He'd given up on calling Danny tonight. Yes, now we're down to it. The specific silver that both manufacturers used to produce their amalgam, it came from a mine in the southeastern part of the state, New Mexico. Specifically, a little town called Hillsdale. Pike tried to absorb what all this meant, if anything. Are you there, Mitch said? Still with me? Sort of. Let me jump around with a couple questions. How come, with probably thousands of people getting this same shit in their cavities from these same two factories or whatever, we only got a few like me? What was your other question? Mitch said. Only that, yeah, so what? You're saying there's some special shit in that silver then? Believe me, Mitch said, I'm on it. That's next. On your first concern, yes. There may absolutely be other unique similarities to the test group. Test group now, Pike said. Mitch said, what's your blood type? Pike said he didn't know and had to go. He didn't like to be late when he told someone he'd do something, but he tried Danny anyway. Oh, hi there, she said. Uh-oh, not the best greeting. Pike said, everything's running together on me, but there have been a few developments. Well, yes, I appreciate your thinking of me in that regard, she said, a little too politely. The heck is that? Pike said. It was a man's voice in the background, gruff and slightly muffled. Actually, that wasn't Pike. The heck is that was the man's voice in the background, gruff and slightly muffled. Pike heard the man's voice. I need to go, Danny said, and I thank you for your time, sir. Pike sat there picturing how it might play out. No matter how he tossed it around, it didn't end well. Not for Danny, and certainly not for the latest, Mr. Gruff. He thought of something that Mrs. Hopper, the sophomore English teacher he liked, would say when they discussed themes in books, which Pike was learning you could apply to a whole lot more, too. The expression his teacher used was, cultivate your own garden. I mean, what else could you do? Pike thought. Chapter 39. They were getting ready to play Ramsey Tech in the sectional semifinal. Guys were fired up at practice Tuesday and a few skirmishes broke out, which coach didn't try to stop. He liked the players on edge, didn't care for them being best friends with each other, with the most important game of the season on the line. He thought some healthy, brawling, built character was how he put it, though Pike thought that was a bunch of crap. Part of the reason for the excitement was the sectionals were doing something different every year. They were putting the semis of Hamilton's division alongside the semis of the Central Coast section, which would run all day Saturday at Bulldog Stadium on the campus of Fresno State University. So their little team from Little Beacon would be playing in a Division I college building that seated 40,000. There had been more news about Mr. Fox and Mr. Milburn. A reporter for a Bay Area newspaper had been in town poking around, and then now there's this big article he writes on the whole situation that has everyone talking. It was developing into the kind of nonsense you see on those shows like Dateline and 2020 that his mom and sister were always watching. The reporter played up the angle of Mr. Milburn going after Mr. Fox. Trying to kill him twice was how he labeled it. Also bringing in the part now where Fox gets a fancy lawyer who is putting the unsophisticated Beacon Police Department through the ringer. Forcing them a million ways to back up it being drunk driving. According to the lawyer, the police procedure that night broke all kinds of rules, which wouldn't surprise Pike, unfortunately. Meanwhile, the newspaper article makes Mr. Milburn look like some kind of monster, like a time bomb ticking down to explode as he waits his opportunity to take another crack at Mr. Fox. The reporter tried to speak to Pike because he had heard about Pike having the original fight with Fox in the backyard and then following it up by scaring Mr. Fox at the skate rink. The reporter was thorough. Pike had to give him that, but he didn't say a word to the guy. Either way, more bad all around for Audrey and Haley, though for whatever reason, Haley seemed to be handling the tragedy better than Audrey. Pike supposed that's the way it worked, that one sister probably would, while the other carried the brunt of it for years. As for Mr. Milburn paying the price, Pike had seen it in movies and even a few books, where the victim keeps on getting the worst of it. It never seemed believable in fiction, but here you were. Pike was still trying to wrap his mind around what Mitch had come up with and what it all might mean. And the left-handed stuff and criminy, now the blood-type business. Though he couldn't help it, he was intending to ask Danny her blood-type last night. And he would for sure if the new dude she was hooked up with didn't interfere. Is that how it was shaping up? Okay, let's go out on a limb, Pike was thinking, and say the silver from the same New Mexico mine, if that's what it was, that he and the Texas guy were apparently carrying around. Let's say Danny miraculously had the same silver in her mouth. Let's say the Florida and Utah people did too, as well as Reggie Riley's brother, even though he was probably hallucinating about an alien implant. Again, that doesn't add up. You'd be hearing about hundreds more, at least, all experiencing the same shit. So what? There's more layers to it now? Left-handed? Same blood type? Or if not that, something else unique in their bodies that opens them up vulnerable to the effect of some weird silver? But that's exactly where Mitch was going, wasn't he? Again, tonight when Pike got home from practice, there wasn't the greatest vibe around the house. His mom and dad were cordial to each other, but they barely interacted. Pike said he had to take care of something and would miss dinner, and he went to McDonald's. He liked the dollar menu and was able to scarf down 3 burgers without spending a lot. It was comfortable there. He was nice and satisfied now, and what was the rush going back home? So he started Googling around. He tried Alien Silver New Mexico. The top result was something called Roswell Silver, which turned out to be a silly $14 coffee mug sold by the local Walmart down there. It had a drawing of an alien's head on the side of it. Pike had heard of Roswell, though. Never paid attention to it, but look that up now. First, you had a TV series called Roswell from 2001. Pike wasn't familiar with it and realized he would have been 2 years old, so no wonder. He skimmed over the plot description, and it looked like you had aliens disguised as humans going to the high school down there. Oh, no. But there was more on Roswell besides the idiot TV show. Its claim to fame apparently was something crashed there outside of town on someone's ranch in 1947. There was a cult following now of UFO people like Mitch. There were photocopies of 2 different newspaper articles from back then. The first announced a flying saucer had crashed. The second, a couple days later, said that was wrong. It was only a weather balloon. That made sense to Pike, of course. People want to believe in stuff, but you're always going to find a logical explanation. Aren't you? Except what he couldn't quite get past was, if it was only a weather balloon, why was the government there and securing the area and hanging around for days, which is what seemed like happened? Pike called Mitch. What would they be doing in New Mexico, he said. Mitch laughed. Good to hear you're on track, he said. Saucers? Well, there's one line of thought, a pretty compelling one I might add, that they were interested in our nuclear weapons. You know the world's first nuclear test was down there in 1945, right? In White Sands. Pike said he didn't know that. I'm guessing you're asking about Roswell, Mitch said, the well-known incident. I'm not discounting it, but that's a story for another day. One thing now, what about this silver mine in Hillsdale with our thing? I put out an APB on my website today. What's an APB? Pike said. All Points Bulletin. Old police term. Oh, Pike said, and you're looking for what exactly from your followers? Simply, if anyone has knowledge, hearsay or otherwise, of a UFO incident around Hillsdale. Pike said that a UFO decided to put a spell on their little silver mine, and that's why I'm screwed up. You make fun of the concept, Mitch said, though I can feel you at least going back and forth now. One thing that's hard to ignore is your Mr. Riley's brother. When he insisted an alien mess with his teeth, we in the UFO community take that quite seriously. That even though he may have indeed visited a dentist, as you did, a sixth sense likely told him a supernatural influence was involved. Pike was getting a headache. He said, so this APB, anyone answer? Not yet. Something else I verified. The mine closed in 54. For a long time, decades, they opened it again in 1997. Okay, Pike said. So then anyone could have got in there in those, what, 40 years and did something to that silver, contaminated it or whatnot? Even a terrorist, for all we know. Why the heck are you so sure outer space stuff was involved? I just am, Mitch said. Chapter 40. The team got on the bus at school Friday and spent the night at a motel in Clovis, which was across the freeway from the Fresno State campus. Pike had received some mild interest from one of the Fresno State coaches, but going here would be a whole lot different than Utah State. Not that Utah State was a possibility anymore, but still. The Fresno deal was you had traffic, malls and strip malls, stoplights and cement. A place like Utah, you had mountains and green and wide open spaces. Anyhow, the motel part was fun and he roomed with Clark. There was another team staying there, Wickinger out of Visalia from the other conference, playing their own semifinal. And they had some nice guys. It was refreshing to just kick back with them and get his mind off everything else. They had a team breakfast, and before it was over, Coach got up and asked for quiet and thanked everyone for being a part of it. He added the usual BS about just go out there and have fun. And then he had trouble finishing. He kind of choked up and started breaking down. Pike and Clark looked at each other like, this is over the top. But if it made Coach feel good to get so emotional, what could you do? Unfortunately, at the main event, the game, no one for Hamilton had much fun. Ramsey Tech was too strong, had too many stud athletes on both sides of the ball. Pike was trying to keep them in it, was throwing it well, moving the chains, but guys weren't open enough and they were being shadowed and smothered by the Ramsey defenders. It was rough to complete much downfield, and Pike had to settle for chipping away short. Meanwhile, Ramsey came at you all directions, all ways, when they had the ball. It unfortunately felt like men playing against boys after a while. Pike was tempted to ask Coach to put him in on defense so he could help stop the bleeding, so to speak. But he knew that was only asking for trouble, since either he held back and Ramsey continued dominating, or he stepped it up and started hospitalizing guys with savage tackles, which would only draw scrutiny. And Hamilton was too far behind to come back anyway, so it wouldn't even make a difference. The game ended mercifully, and Hamilton lost by 42, 63-21. Pike looked around as he walked off the field. It was weird being down here playing in a legit college stadium after being in the stands as a spectator at Utah State. Maybe it was true this place really held 40,000. But there were what, 2,000 or 3,000 here tops? You had a scattering of Hamilton kids and parents who made the trip down, the same for the other team, and then there were the fans for the next game who'd gotten there early. The whole thing was kind of bittersweet, and Pike wondered if this was the last football game he'd be playing. He didn't know it until they'd showered and were outside the locker room saying hi to people that Audrey had come down. Pike gave her a long hug. "I'm awfully sorry," she said. There was a tragic tone the way she said it, Pike thought, and now he was wondering if she was building up to breaking up with him. Luckily, she only meant she was sorry about the game, but she looked so sad, so down. Pike told her, first of all, forget about the dumb game. He tried to say a few things to her, distract her, get her to lighten up a little, but it was tough. They were into early November. Today was the 12th. So what did that make it? 6 weeks since she lost her mom? Pike was thinking, now's when the real grind starts, isn't it? The state of shock is over, and now you're facing the real world, and it can't be a pretty sight. He hated to consider it, but the reality was, Audrey might never be completely happy again. Still, he got permission from Coach to ride back with her instead of on the team bus, and he once again admired her for putting up a brave front, and by the time they hit Beacon, the turnoff, they were at least having a few laughs here and there. Chapter 41. It was Sunday, and Pike was laying around on the couch flipping channels. Everything was anticlimactic all of a sudden. No more games to look forward to, no more practices, which even though no one really liked them, you got used to in a funny way. No more walking around school on Mondays with people coming up to you and saying good game, even teachers. College for next fall was a total question mark. Now there were 6 months left to be a high school kid. Pike supposed that was a good thing, but he couldn't get past feeling deflated today and out of whack. The text came in from Mitch around 2. "Bingo," it said. He'd gotten those bingo-type messages from Mitch before. Some of them were overly dramatic, but there usually was something concrete there when Mitch got all excited. This could be a pain in the ass to deal with right now. Pike wasn't in the mood, and he shut off his phone and tried to get into a rerun of Hawaii 5-0. But he couldn't, and he fell into a long, hard sleep, one foot on the couch, and the other still flat on the floor, but that didn't matter, he was out. When he woke up, there was more weird news circulating now. Disturbing shit. He hadn't even thought about it, but no, he hadn't seen Fox, the kid, at school for a while. Now it turns out Fox maybe hooked up with some Oxy people over in Salinas. Oxycontin. Mean stuff. The scary word was a couple of them got caught breaking into houses in Carmel, but that Fox wasn't one of them. This was hard to swallow. If even part of it was true, Fox was screwed. He's either a desperate addict or is a criminal now. At the very least, he's AWOL from Beacon, and something was going on, none of it good. Pike thought of how when you skip a rock on a flat lake, there's always the ripple effect. One terrible moment that couldn't have lasted more than a few seconds, and now look at Audrey, and Mr. Milburn. You've got Fox now, not to mention his old man, and of course Haley. The doorbell rang. It was Audrey. She was crying. Again. Are your parents here? She said. I only saw the one car. Yours. Come on in, babe, Pike said. We're good. We're alone. What is it? This is so difficult to tell you, she said. Now Pike was genuinely nervous, and he was starting to worry about Audrey's mental health. He said, nope, please, don't hold anything back at this point. That'd be the least healthy thing you could do. I know you're right, she said. It's just so hard. Pike eased her onto the couch. He was making a mental note to gently suggest, when the timing was right, she see some kind of therapist. He should have thought of this before. My mom's things, she said. It's been too soon, but today, finally, I had the strength to begin going through them. I'm proud of you, Pike said. Has to be brutal, I can't imagine, but you're doing what's necessary. There were boxes of letters and so forth, journals, major diaries. I never knew what an excellent writer my mom was, and so prolific. What's that mean? Pike said. It means she wrote an abundant amount, hundreds of journal entries, quite personal, and some very long ones. Audrey took a deep breath, folded her hands, and stared at the floor. Pike, your dad and my mom were having an affair. It took a moment for the words to resonate. When they did, Pike's legs started to feel weak, and it was as though he was sitting in the easy chair on the other side of the coffee table, detached, watching Audrey converse with some stranger on the couch. Finally, he came up with one word. When? I'm not sure, Audrey said. I had to stop reading. There may have been others as well. She came into his arms. Pike tried to comfort her, but his mind was racing, and she felt so heavy against him. Other people, he said, not adding, but wondering, others for my dad, too? I think so, she said, and now I'm angry at her. Can you believe it? What on earth is wrong with me? There's nothing the matter with you, he said, stroking her cheek. She had her secrets, and she probably had her reasons. But you have a right to be upset. Well, thank you for that, she said. Her face was soaking wet, and her eyes looked badly bloodshot. And now, unfortunately, I've got to deal with my dad, Pike said. Can you believe it? I'm sorry, I know how that sounded. That didn't come out right. It's okay, I understand what you meant, Audrey said and was sobbing again. Pike was trying to make sense of the timeline and his parents' recent behavior. When you say you're not sure how it happened or when it happened, he said, were you able to narrow it down at all? I mean, was it like going on right when the incident occurred? Audrey appeared to think about it. I don't think so, she said. It seemed to have been well in the past, something that ran its course. Pike realized Audrey may very well be lying to him now for his benefit. Even through it all, these last 6 weeks, she managed to put others first. It was one of the several qualities he admired about her. The other side of it, of course, is maybe it really was in the past, and that it wasn't a full-blown affair, but just a midlife fling type deal. Which means, possibly his parents aren't getting along right now for other reasons. Or Mrs. Milburn's death got to her dad, period, even though their fling was long over. Maybe. It didn't matter now, but still, Pike badly wanted it not to be true that his dad and Aubrey's mom were hooked up when it happened. Nothing would be worse than that. Are you hungry? He said. Do you want to take a drive? The doorbell rang again. What now? Pike excused himself for a moment. standing there, shorts, sweatshirt, Dodgers cap, big sideways smile, Mitch. What the heck? Pike said. Mind if I come in, Mitch said, stepping inside regardless, not waiting for Pike to answer. Pike closed the door and introduced Mitch to Audrey, who was standing up and had tried to quickly improve her appearance. A pleasure, Mitch said, letting his eye linger on Audrey. A little too long for Pike's taste. Audrey was back to her bubbly, sweet self. To an outsider, she was a typical high school kid, having good times her senior year, everything ahead of her, and she and Mitch talked about college and careers and travel, Mitch telling her that backpacking through Europe when he was 18 was the best thing he ever did, and going into way too much detail. Pike was feeling excluded, but whether she was faking it or not, he could see this was good for Audrey. Finally, their life discussion wound down, and she said she had to go, and she gave Mitch a minor hug on the way out, which clearly made the old man's day. Wow-wee, Mitch said when she was gone. Have you got a winner there? Anyway, Pike said, you hungry? That's what I was in the middle of asking my girlfriend, when you, most unexpectedly, dropped in. How'd you find me, you don't mind me asking? Online white pages, same way we tracked down our friend Wayne Lucaris. There was only one Gillette listed in Beacon, and bingo. You keep using that word, don't say that anymore. And what, you just decided to take a little Sunday drive? Yeah, well, Melinda's been getting on me, he said. Too much time at the computer, a little break never hurts. Plus, I want to go over some stuff. They went to Applebee's, which Pike figured wasn't the worst thing because it took 20 minutes each way, and Mitch could get whatever he needed to off his chest and then hopefully just leave when they got back. After Pike finished his club sandwich with a side of chicken wings, he said, I'm more energized now. I can listen better. You don't say, Mitch said. Appetite has never been your strong suit. Of course I'm kidding. Incidentally, not the main reason I'm here, but did you know Aaron Rodgers saw a UFO? Wait, the football Aaron Rodgers, Pike said? Yeah, there was just an article about it. I'll link to it right here. It happened several years ago back in New Jersey, near a power plant, a nuclear one. Does that sound familiar? Pike was skeptical. What's he doing bringing it up now then? Just that a sports writer asked him a question that triggered it. Aaron was playing for Cal then, was driving cross country with a couple of college teammates. They all agree they saw it. Pike didn't watch a whole lot of pro football, but Rodgers was one of his favorite players and probably his favorite NFL quarterback. In fact, his dad had taken him up to Berkeley for a couple of Cal games when Rodgers was there. Pike was maybe 6 years old, but remembered them clearly. I'll check it out if you say so, he said. But cut to the main reason you're here. Fair enough, Mitch said. I got one reply to my APB, but it's a doozy. A gentleman, retired actually in Bermuda now, he insists there was an incident over Hillsdale in 1956. You're saying he saw something there, Pike said? Not with his own eyes, no, but his daddy was a state trooper, New Mexico State Police. Years later, he let his son in on it. That one night at dusk, he's patrolling down there, one of the old two lanes, barely any cars, when he sees this circular craft, hanging there, low, maybe a mile away, which he places as right smack on top of the damn town, Hillsdale. Pike let it sink in. One more thing to have to process. Son, we got our smoking gun, Mitch said. Hold on a second, Pike said. This guy's probably making the whole thing up, having fun, jerking you around. What's stopping him? What's stopping him, Mitch said, is I didn't mention anything about Hillsdale in my APB. You didn't? No, That's the information I was zeroed in on, obviously, but my APB simply asked for knowledge of other UFO incidents in New Mexico around the time of Roswell. Oh, Pike said. And I said I got one response. What I really meant was one pertinent response. A gold medal one, in fact. I did get two others, which I'll check out at some point. But I'm only concerned with the Hillsdale sighting right now, for obvious reasons. Pike didn't address it again until they got back in the car. I'm gonna level with you, he said. It's killing me to have to buy into this shit. I can tell, Mitch said. Honestly, I'd probably be reacting the same way. Pike said, but if I bought in, and I keep coming back to this, they messed with the silver supply? They radiated or something, which energized me? And why would they do that? Mitch said, or possibly added to it. Since the silver itself checked out normally in the lab, if we can believe Wayne. It was what they couldn't identify. That was the issue, and the reason you almost wasted the guy. Don't be ridiculous. I didn't almost waste anyone. Be easy to do, though, son. You need to keep a lid on yourself. I'm sure you've heard it, but the expression, he didn't know his own strength? Don't worry about it, Pike said, but he was flashing on Danny and picturing Marcus suspended up in that wall. You were saying, though, Mitch said, it's killing you to buy into it, but? Pike said, okay, this is totally crazy, but if someone bought into it, then the time travel part, could you change stuff? There was a dirt pullout up ahead that put you alongside a big walnut orchard, and Mitch took it, stopped the car, and turned off the engine. What would you want to change? Mitch said, quieter, more serious now. It doesn't matter. It could be one or two things. Pike took a long look at Mitch. You really think part of my power is maybe I can go back? Mitch nodded. You may feel you've been cursed, but part of me believes the opposite, that you've been blessed with supernatural powers. Time travel could indeed be a logical extension of that. Why, Pike said, because of the gobbledygook that Reggie Riley spit out about his brother doing it? Partly that, yes, but even more, we UFO fanatics believe time travel is an inherent part of the extraterrestrial experience. It allows them to traverse vast distances and quite likely multiple dimensions that earthy physics deems impossible. Rather than travel via conventional propulsion across space, the thought is they bend it, fold it. Same with time. Pike resisted another, oh my God, even though he wanted to blurt one out. He said, so bottom line, you're saying there's more chance I could travel than there is for the average Joe? I would say so, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if you've been empowered in that capacity. I'd put the odds at 50% at least. Mitch winked at him. Gee, thanks for such a major vote of confidence, as I actually toy with the idea of trying it. Mitch said, something tells me you're not joking around. Why not? Pike said. I still don't think I believe any of it, no matter who claims they saw what. And now you're telling me 60 years ago someplace? But what's the worst that could happen? Chapter 42. Mitch dropped him at home and took off back to Manhattan Beach, and then right away, Pike started thinking, what's the worst that could happen? Could mean a few different things. I may get stuck somewhere and that's it. I can't get back. I may think I can change something, but it could backfire on me and everyone might end up worse off, myself included. I may die trying this. The other possibility, of course, the likely one, is he wouldn't be successful in going anywhere. Which, when it came down to it at this point, wouldn't be great either. How did Mitch say it worked again? Wormholes and space portals and such? But there could also be a mind over matter element to it, in theory. Had Mr. Gilmore given any insight into that that he'd missed? Monday felt like a light day at school, probably because there was no football practice to worry about. Mr. Fanning, the assistant principal, made an announcement at lunch over the campus PA system, how we appreciate the incredible efforts of our student athletes and so on in contributing to Hamilton's best ever showing in football. And let's keep the momentum alive into next season and beyond, and go Wildcats. A bunch of the football guys were getting together to play a little basketball after school, have fun, blow off some steam. It was getting some juice, though, becoming an event, and there were going to be people watching. Pike could dunk the ball easily now, not just routine slams, but real showtime stuff. Part of him wanted to do that, put on a little show, nothing that was beyond human, just raise a few eyebrows and have some fun. But instead, when the bell rang, Pike headed to the Beacon Municipal Library. He'd only been in the place a few times in his life when he'd had to write a paper where you need the old-fashioned encyclopedias. He didn't know his way around, but luckily there was a friendly librarian sitting at a desk in back who didn't look busy. "Books on time travel, please," Pike said. "Where would I find those?" The librarian rattled around on her keyboard. "Would you be needing time travel in literature or metaphysics?" she said. "Gee," he said, "literature, that might work, but that'd be fiction, right?" "Yes," she said, "we have quite a few titles there that reference your topic. In metaphysics, we have 3. "So that's nonfiction then, right? How someone would do it? How? With, like, instructions?" "Yes, I believe so," the librarian said. "Let's have a look." She got up and led Pike down an aisle and then turned left down another one. "Here are the first 2, she said. "The 3rd is in our reference room." Pike thanked her, skimmed the first 2, which were all over the place, and as far as he could tell, barely touched on the subject. He found the librarian again and asked her about the 3rd one, and she took him into a special room where all the books were locked up in tall glass cases. They had these built-in wooden ladders that you slide around, and then you got up there pretty high and came down with the 3rd book. It had a leather cover, something Pike had never seen before, and it felt odd. The librarian told him he couldn't check it out, but to please make himself comfortable in this room and to simply leave the book on one of the tables when he was finished. It was cozy in there. They had some overstuffed chairs where you could relax and read, and Pike pretty much had the whole room to himself. The book was called In Due Time by W.H. Wallaby. There was an introduction on the subject, then there was a section on methods, and then one on people's experiences. But what caught Pike's eye was chapter 6, second from the end. It was titled The 10 Rules of Time Travel. He read it through, and before he left the special research room of the library that day, he read it through 3 times more, and then pulled out a piece of binder paper and wrote them all down. The rules were: what the mind conceives, the mind can achieve. 2. Success is contingent on the traveler's need. 3. Consider the present day setting when preparing to back travel. 4. 1 travel day equals 1 present day hour. 5. Travelers must maintain focus on the task at hand. 6. Travel can be facilitated by implementing time and place assistance. 7. Reverse travel is fundamentally identical. 8. Consequences of alterations should be carefully considered. 9. Any alteration should be enacted according to the laws of the universe. 10. Travelers should avoid engaging non-travelers. It was dinner time when Pike got out of there. He grabbed a deli sandwich and didn't really want to go home, having to psychoanalyze now what was going on with his parents. Plus, he was so mad at his dad. So he drove to the mall and walked around. Hopefully, he wouldn't run into anyone he knew, and it gave him a chance to think. He wanted to tell Kathy what he was considering, since she would get it. But again, that would be downright rude now to involve her, since she'd moved on and seemed happy. Then there was Nanny. Would this be a good time to clue her in on all the latest from Mitch, and also on what he was considering now? Pike decided that would be a mistake, the last part, because she might get some notion in her head and try it herself. And who knows how that could turn out. If it turned out at all, of course. He did wonder how she was doing, though, so he gave her a try. She answered on the second ring. "It's sweet of you to call," he said. "Everything's fine in eastern Idaho." Because that last time, Pike said, it didn't sound all that fine. "Yes, well, that was Richard," she said. "He's out of the picture at this point." Pike almost asked, but didn't, what "out of the picture" meant, but Danny clarified it anyway. "I told him it wasn't a good fit, and he walked out without saying anything, and I haven't heard from him since." "Good then," Pike said. "No lingering effects or anything." "Not a one," she said. "The best thing, I found someone else, Bob. We met at the gym. We're getting along famously." So far, Pike thought, but he hoped for the best. "Let me ask you something," he said. "You mentioned going to the gym. If you don't work out, do you gain weight?" "Gosh, that's kind of a strange question, but now I see where you're going, of course. I don't think so. Do you?" "I don't think so either," Pike said. He was intending to tell her about Mitch's findings, the amalgam sources being narrowed down, the mysterious disappearance of the Texas filling, the Hillsdale silver mine, and the supposed 60-year-old UFO. But it was too much tonight, both for him to get into detail, and it probably was too much for Danny to absorb. Plus, there was no solution, no conclusion that he could share with her. So what was the point, really? "Thank you for staying in touch," Danny said. "It means a lot." "Well, stay safe," he said. "And you as well," she said. Chapter 43. The week continued uneventfully, except in Pike's head, where a whole lot of possibilities were being mulled over. Thursday evening, he called Mitch. "What I'm working on now," Mitch said, "is finding someone from back in the day out there to collaborate our story." "Wait a second," Pike said. "I thought you said you believed it, that you had the smoking gun." "I do believe it. There must have been other witnesses, though. I want more details. The problem we have, Hillsdale became a ghost town quick once they closed the mine." "So how do you find anyone then?" Pike said. "I don't know exactly. Maybe old tax records? Work it from there. I have to go out there, though, most likely." "Okay," Pike said. "On the travel part, I'm going to try it Saturday." "Whoa! Hold your horses now," Mitch said. "What did you just say?" "Then I'm going to give it a go. What's the problem?" Pike wasn't at all sure he was going to go through with it. He was testing Mitch. Mitch said, "Well, not a problem so much as, I don't know, are you prepared?" "What do you mean? You already convinced me I've been empowered, that I can achieve this, and I've been doing some soul searching, and I think I can. There was about 30 seconds of silence on the other end of the line. Well, where would this be taking place? Mitch said. Do you need help? I think I got it, Pike said. But I found these 10 rules. I'd like to run them by you. Read them again, Mitch said after he'd listened carefully. Pike did. Okay, the main thing I'm picking up from this, Mitch said. Actually, two things. But the first one, you want to acutely visualize the time and place so you don't end up somewhere way the hell off target. What was the second thing? Pike said. It was the one about consider the present day setting when preparing to back travel. To me, that means start from the appropriate place. In this case, I would begin your transcension in a structure that predates 1956. Now, how in the world do you make that leap? Pike said. There's nothing in there about that, and that makes no sense at all. Do it anyway, Mitch said. There was a conviction in his voice. We'll see, Pike said. My main thing, I wanted to run by you in case this backfires somehow and I can't get back home, which is pretty ridiculous to even talk about because I seriously doubt I'll be going anywhere to start with. Keep going, Mitch said. Well, I was going to try to go back just one day. Ah, I see. So heaven forbid there's an issue. You simply live out the one day and you're back where you started. Kind of like no harm, no foul, Pike said. That could work, Mitch said. Could? Should, Mitch said. I wouldn't try to interact with yourself, though, if you happen to run into yourself back there. Ah, geez. That wasn't in the rules. I think it sort of is, Mitch said. Pike took a moment. He said, I know I give you a hard time, but I appreciate everything you've been doing for me. I'll call you Sunday. Pike hung up before Mitch had a chance to respond. Chapter 44. It was a weird feeling heading over to school on Saturday afternoon. If they'd somehow beaten Ramsey Tech last weekend, today would be the sectional championship game, also down in Fresno. Once they lost, Pike hadn't even been interested enough to find out who Ramsey Tech's opponent would be. This afternoon, there were two people playing tennis, one dad playing catch with his kid on the baseball field, and a couple of dog walkers on the track. Pretty quiet. The gym was open, but it was dark and there was nothing going on. Maybe they had kids' basketball practice or indoor soccer or something else earlier, but that was all finished. You walked through the gym, then you had the regular student locker rooms, and then the football locker room all by itself at the end of the hall where the door opened out to the practice field. Just before you got to the football locker room, there was a custodian's closet. Pike decided a couple days ago that that would work. It was private, he could focus, and he felt safe being at school on familiar turf. Plus, Hamilton was built in 1954, he had checked, so that met Mitch's crazy criteria, too. He hadn't thought about the closet being locked up, but he tried it, and luckily it was open. There was a pretty good dose of a detergent smell in there, or bleach, or whatever, but that didn't bother Pike. The only concern now was Julio, the custodian. Was he around today with the gym being open? Pike decided he probably wasn't and went into the closet and closed the door. At some point, we have to take our chances. He sat on the ground and folded his legs. He covered his face with his hands and thought back to yesterday after school, when he'd purposely sat in the football stands for an hour, trying to clear his mind of all the clutter, trying to set the stage for today, to give himself a target. Now on the cement floor, he focused on the metal stadium benches, the empty field, the crispness of the mid-November air, the smell of the grass, the sounds of trucks passing by on the outskirts of town, a train whistle in the distance. His breathing slowed. There was a stillness, a peace here. The problem was, it was all good, but Pike didn't feel like he was going anywhere. Except that now he was feeling slightly funky. There was a bit of a spinning. It was different. Not like the spinning when you overdo it on a playset when you're a little kid, and not like when you fall off something and hit your head. The spinning became a sudden shaking, but just for a moment, and then everything was smooth, and something told Pike to open his eyes. He was in the stadium, on the bench, by himself. But when he looked down at the field, it wasn't Hamilton High School. It was Maverick Stadium at Utah State. He was back in Logan. Son of a bitch. The strange thing, once he got his bearings, was he wasn't alarmed or particularly scared. The stadium clock said 4:42, which seemed about right when you adjusted an hour for the time zone. No date up there on the scoreboard, though. Pike walked out of the stadium onto the campus and headed toward the main quad. There were students here and there, not a whole lot, which seemed reasonable since classes would have ended by now. It also could have been a weekend, you couldn't tell. At least, thank God, everyone looked normal, current, not like he was back in 1968 or something. Hopefully. It seemed a strange question to put out there to stop someone and ask what day it was. But Pike needed to know, and he wasn't thrilled with walking all over campus looking for the answer. A guy and a girl came toward him, holding hands, pretty deep in serious conversation. Pike held up his hand. "Excuse me," he said. "Would you have today's date, please?" Asking for the date and not the day seemed more reasonable. Less likely someone would think he was mentally ill. "Sure," the guy said. "It's the 18th. Now Pike realized that didn't help. The 18th of what? "Of November," he said. He had to ask. He couldn't be worried if the guy thought he was nuts. "Oh yeah, you got it," the guy said. Pike wanted to confirm with the guy what year it was, but that was going a little too far. Or maybe not. 2016, he said timidly. The guy and his girlfriend both nodded, but kept moving now. They didn't seem interested in any further questions from Pike. Let's see, Pike was thinking. Today, at least my today, is Saturday the 19th. So I butchered the location, but bingo! That means I got the day right. This would take practice, clearly. The main thing now, pleasant as it was out here, could he execute part two? Otherwise, he'd have a serious transportation issue to deal with and only a couple of bucks in his pocket. The campus had a mix of old and new buildings. No point taking a chance on something being too modern. So he picked one that was definitely old enough, red brick with decorative columns in the front and ivy growing up the side. There were some display cases in the lobby, and it looked like maybe an anthropology building. There were classrooms and professors' offices, and then a main auditorium. Pike went in there. The lights were on, but it was empty, and there was no sign of activity. There was a small staircase that put you up on stage, and then there were curtains to either side where actors or professors or whoever would enter. Pike picked the left curtain, went behind it, sat cross-legged on the floor, and repeated the whole shebang in reverse. He zoned in on Beacon, the high school, the football stands, late Saturday afternoon. His breathing slowed, and the spinning began again, familiar this time, comforting, and then the rattling, the moment of slightly violent shaking, and finally he looked around, and he was on the sidewalk in front of Audrey's house. He hadn't intended to think about her in that little alcove offstage behind the curtain. In fact, he made a conscious effort not to, but he obviously had. There was a newspaper slot next to Audrey's mailbox, and there was a paper in there which hadn't been picked up yet. Pike took it out and unfolded it and checked the date. It was today, Saturday the 19th. Audrey lived a couple miles from school, and Pike supposed he should go get his car. He figured it would be a nice walk, and what was the rush? So he took it slow and drank it all in. There were possibilities. Time would tell if he could pull them off. For now, he was home. The end.